From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of October, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with AgMarket.net's Kurt Kimmel from Normal, Illinois. Adam Davis, Department Head of Crop Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, will discuss the Harvest Open House that happened yesterday at the South Farms. You'll want to listen in on that. He has some ideas about what the future of crop sciences and agriculture might look like across the state. And then we'll take up what Ed Usett from University of Minnesota Extension has to say about the broader context of the commodity markets across the planet, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, I'm out of the office this afternoon, so no numbers from the CME group. In fact, we're recording on Sunday evening, as I should be in the field with my brothers running the grain cart. But today, we are on some really steep hills, the kind that if you make a mistake, you turn the tractor over. So thought it best not to try to do radio from the tractor cab on this Monday. Kurt Kimmel actually was kind enough to join me on Sunday evening to record. Thanks, Kurt, for doing this. I appreciate that. What did the Sunday evening opens look like, by the way?
Well, Todd, I thought you farmed in central Illinois, not in Missouri or Iowa. We're currently in the 7:30 here. Mark's been trading for about a half hour. Corn's up 8, beans up 9 cents, wheat's up 9 cents. Meal and oil are both a little higher there. It was kind of brutal there last week, particularly, for the soybean complex. We saw an increase in an extra 34 million bushels, a little bit more inventory around than expected, bump in yield, and there's just some demand concerns. But that set the sell signals there late last week, and the funds jumped on that, and we went below some support levels, concern that we were seeing demand slow down in through there. Also, too, yields. We got harvest coming up. So it was multiple things coming all together to put the beans on the negative side of it. We're down to some areas here where we left a gap quite a ways back under this 1350 area. We'll see if that kind of holds this coming week. Also, too, China's on holiday this week. So we'll see if there's any individual private sectors that want to buy some beans versus the agencies themselves being on holiday. Corn kind of the opposite, kind of what we thought there. As everybody knows, less bushels around in inventories, particularly in elevators. And the significance of that is they were just bone dry, and that set the stage here. They were actually in a position they didn't have any grain to blend off, use old crop to blend with new or blending capabilities whatsoever. They took advantage of the higher prices, moved that grain on out into the channels there, whereas most of the inventory that we saw left was on farm. And we'll have a tighter number on the corn, a little bigger number on the beans, but the number one factor is harvest activity as we take place moving forward here. One thing I did pick up late last week, and I don't know if it's a major item here, but I don't know if anybody's talked about it, these E3 beans, they're coming in darker. It's not the elevator, but the next step. Some of these elevators don't have grading cards to take a look at that, but there's talk that maybe this discoloration can go into poultry and make the breast meat darker and have some effect in the color in the egg yolk. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that kind of came out last week on these E3 beans, Todd.
No, I did not catch this. I know when I traveled to Rotterdam, there were soybeans coming in from Brazil, and they had a red or pink tint to them because of the iron content. I suppose that probably happens in Georgia and other places here in the United States where there are kind of reddish soils and high iron soil content. However, the vegetable oil, they had to go through clarification. So there is a way to process the color out of the oil. It'd be interesting to see what that looks like. If you're feeding it to an animal, you're probably not going to worry about that so much. And then, of course, the bean meal would be largely being fed to animals. I do have some other questions about corn and soybeans. The grain stocks numbers were released last week. We now have an ending stocks for the last marketing year at 1.376 billion bushels. That's down from the previous number, of course. And the soybeans at 273 million. What do you think of those numbers when they were released?
Well, they were the extremes there. On the agmarket.net team, they had a low guess of on the corn stocks, and it came in below that. But they had a low estimate on the bean stocks. They came way above the trade estimates. What's going to happen on the corn is they're going to say, well, demand's slow, and try to subtract from demand. And one thing to keep in mind, it has to be on the export side of it. The feed category is miscellaneous. And we'll have good feed usage here as we go into this new marketing year. Even though some of the livestock numbers are down, but these guys are going to hold on to grain. They don't want to be caught short. So judging feed usage won't really get a real accurate handle on it until we get into that probably third quarter. Bean-wise, the concern there is, yeah, we got a little higher carryout. Ideas are if China's going to buy or some of this demand. So they're kind of concerned that maybe the demand can slow a little bit through here. But as we move into this October 12th report, the trade's kind of geared up for a slightly less yield number. So it's going to be a balancing act. The bottom line is we have old crop numbers to work with. We got the new crop yield kind of getting pegged in. Now, the key question is, from a supply-driven market to a demand-driven market.
Hey, thank you very much.
Very good. Take care, Todd.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with agmarket.net. Just a quick reminder, we talked with Kurt on Sunday evening. Well, on Sunday, the Crop Sciences Department at the University of Illinois held an harvest open house on the South Farms. We'll go with the South Farms. It has an official name, but everybody knows it as that. And I think that's the way it felt there on Sunday. Actually, Adam Davis is here. He's with Crop Sciences as their department head. What is this program? Because it doesn't look like a traditional farm program exactly, but you're opening up to a whole lot more folks out here.
Yeah, the idea of this harvest open house today was to welcome the community onto our farms and let them know that this is a place that they're always welcome and to learn the variety of things that we do in crop sciences.
So I have to admit, you're sitting behind a table and you have, let's see, some dough of sorts. Looks like you're making noodles and other things. That's unique.
Yeah, this activity goes from seed to table. And so I wanted the kids, mostly it's kids who are coming to this station, to understand that the pasta that they love to eat actually comes from a seed, which comes from a plant. So I've got a wheat plant on this table. I've got a bucket of seeds. I've got a hand mill, they can turn it into flour, a sieve so they can separate it, and a pasta machine so they can roll it out.
That's very cool. And it's very popular. You serve quite a few people here, and there are a number of people that have been here all day long from 10 o'clock on.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I knew that this particular activity would be popular because when my kids were little, I did it first at Montessori and then at Leal School, and kids just love to turn cranks. There's no two ways about it.
Tell me about what this means in terms of the Department of Crop Sciences and its mission in the state of Illinois.
We are here to serve the people of Illinois, and really one of our main missions in crop sciences is to de-risk the future for growers. We're thinking about what's coming down the line and trying to come up with crops that better deal with future environments. We're trying to come up with more nutritious crops, better ways to protect our crops. And so the variety of events that we have at the Harvest Open House really reflects the huge variety of activity that we have in crop sciences.
So So when I think of traditional agriculture in the state, corn, soybeans, hogs, cattle, wheat is making a bit of a comeback at the moment because economically it makes sense. But in the future, things might change enough that more crops could come in.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great point, Todd. So my own area of scholarship is in cropping system diversification. And the reason I think it's very important is because as you have a more diverse portfolio of crops, it helps you withstand a lot of different challenges. So market challenges, environmental challenges, pest challenges. And wheat is a crop that, as you said, is becoming a little bit more common. We actually have two small grains breeders in our department trying to increase cropping system diversity choices for growers so that they can begin to grow ecosystem services on their farms.
What do you see for the future of crop sciences in, say, the next decade?
So we'll continue to be doing work in our four main areas of plant improvement, plant protection, agronomy and horticulture, and then biometry and statistics. And we'll be taking those areas, but really thinking about upcoming challenges such as climate change, dealing with trying to create more robust and resilient markets, trying to improve the nutritious quality of our foods, and also trying to protect against super pests.
So some of those are about the future, and agronomy is as well, but of course it's about serving the needs of farmers on the land today.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, we've got a brand new major that people can apply to. We have a kind of back to the future, but we have an agronomy major. You know, agronomy is the management of crops and soils, but we're adding a bit of a data component to that and helping the students who are in that major really help take management techniques into the 21st century.
So is this about how you manage data in big Excel spreadsheets and be able to pull from them? What exactly is the data component?
So a lot of our devices in agriculture are connected these days, and they're collecting immense amounts of data, and knowing how to handle that, what to do with it. There are a lot of applications right now that producers use, but an agronomist who's trained in understanding how to understand data and how to make sense of these data products is what we're looking at for the future.
So is this something where, for instance, the data from the planter, the data from the combine, if aggregated correctly, could provide a base for science to develop new products?
Absolutely. One of the trends that we're seeing is that because our production equipment is collecting so much data, the types of experiments that we can do are changing too, and a lot more is going on to farmers' fields. And you can dial an experiment into your planter, for example, and have a bunch of different varieties going in a randomized pattern. You can dial in a different fertilizer and other applicator rates. And so it opens up, I think, a future for a more engaged type of research where producers are involved right at the outset.
That's interesting, and I'll bet you're being looking forward to that time frame where you actually do have producers really involved and engaged on an everyday basis.
Absolutely. I'm very excited that we now have a new field crop extension agronomist in our department, Dr. Giovanni Preza Fontes, and he'll be working closely with our data scientists and reaching out to producer groups, really trying to get partners for these types of large-scale distributed trials across the state.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Adam Davis. He's Crop Sciences Department Head. If you'd like to meet Giovanni, by the way, you'll be able to do that at the Farm Assets Conference. I'll bring more information to you about that in the very near future. I will give you the date. It is the 21st day of November. Not only will Giovanni be there from Crop Sciences, but also Aaron Hager, weed scientist, Nick Sider, who is the entomologist, and Emily Heaton, who works with regenerative agriculture, will be on hand. So it should be a good day, along with the ag economist and the brokers that you normally hear along with me on our ag programming from Illinois Public Media. On Friday last week, the United States Department of Agriculture updated the grain stocks numbers. It was the final figure for last year's harvest, that being the 2021 harvest for corn and soybeans. In the past, the soybean number has been a really good number. USDA really has an accounting segment for it. And they say now the corn number is very good as well. They made some adjustments to those numbers, both to the production side for corn and soybeans, or how many acres were harvested last year, and that adjusted some of what the production looked like, and to also what ending stocks were. Some of that was based on usage, some of it, of course, based on the production, but it changed things just a little bit at USIT from University of Minnesota Extension, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Changed, but it's tweaking. It's still tweaking. But carry-out situations, corn and wheat in particular, in my mind, just are very, well, they're tight. They're tight, Todd. And any other year, I would be sprouting horns on my head, getting quite bullish with a carry-out situation like that. And yet, we go into harvest with some good things happening. Basis is very strong. Basis, you know, I've got a southern mindset, and frankly, the basis for soy harvest is as good as I've ever seen. I mean, and I got 30 years of data. I mean, it's really, really good. And the basis for corn is very, very good. And that all tells me that the pipeline is empty. And we really need this harvest to get going, to get that pipeline filled up again. But the stocks numbers, like you say, you look out ahead and, man, you can make a bullish case in some of these things.
Well, let's talk about the bullish case for corn. The stocks changed by 149 million bushels with an ending stocks. I think this is a projected ending stocks for what WASD would show if nothing else changed in October of something like 1.227 billion bushels, a carryout that's really pretty small.
Really pretty small, and it doesn't get much better if you look worldwide. I mean, it really, it's tight any way you view it, any way you look at it. And like I say, I'd be putting horns on my head. I hesitate with corn because we're already starting. I mean, we've got corn prices, I want to say, for harvest levels are as good as they've ever been. Maybe the harvest, maybe 2012, the drought year might be better. But when you start at that high level, we start to do funny things to demand. We're going to watch that demand number very closely. We can never believe that demand can, it's food. How can demand go down? Well, it does. We can chip away at the edges there. And when you start from that high price, man, it's hard to argue. We're coming out. I have to remind your listeners that the harvest of the post-harvest price rise from harvest of 2020 into the spring of 2021 was just about as good as it gets. I believe it is about as good as it gets over a 30-year period. The only thing close to that is last year. The harvest of 2021 into the spring of last year was almost as good. They were both incredible. And I go back and, can we do it 3 years in a row, Todd? That's a big starting from a high level. And yet the fundamentals, there they are.
What did 2012 look like after the harvest? What happened?
Kind of went flat. We had a very high price at harvest, and I just looked at that before we started talking here, and it stayed high, but it didn't get any higher, and in fact kind of started to come apart by summer of 2013 when we had a crop coming that was decent, and we proved we were having a good crop. Soybeans, I think of the analogy of soybeans. I mean, all they talk about is the amount of planting down in South America. It's huge. I mean, it's huge. But they have to get that crop, too. Planting is one thing. Harvest is another.
So we're starting at a high place for both corn and soybeans. Soybeans we added 30 million bushel to. Ending stocks probably above 300 million when we see it in the WASDE figures for October. That's a fairly large number. A big crop coming on in Brazil, just now being planted, so no counting the chickens from the eggs there just yet. And the corn bullish at a high level, but a big crop, is demand destruction coming?
Yeah, that's what gets me. And weed enters into this picture too. I mean, we just can't take weed out of the equation. And worldwide, you know, wheat looks very constructive, but at the same time, you know, if we think of it from a purely U.S. standpoint, here we've got the doggone dollar as strong as all get out. That's not helping us on the export end competitively. So we have these factors that, you know, a high price and a strong dollar chip away at that demand base. It chips away. And I think demand destruction is harder to see than the supply side of grains. I think we get a better handle on what's coming and when it's coming and the amount of bushels available. I think we have more comfort with that number. What demand destruction is hard to watch. It's hard to detect.
I would think, especially for corn, because so much of it is used internally, domestically.
Yes.
And what, 30% of it into the livestock sector, which is probably where a lot of the demand destruction would show up, I would think.
Yep, that's right. That's right. And that's really hard to put your finger on that. Hard, you know, it's kind of in hindsight we see it, but we really can't measure it going forward.
So don't put your horns on yet?
Oh, I'm going to have to, if I'm in a producer's shoes, I'm going to have some unpriced bushels in the bin and hope for the best, hope for, you know, third time is a charm and we do it again. But this great basis at harvest is begging for grain right now. It's a good price by any means. And a person could do worse than getting things sold and starting to pay attention to 2023, which ought to be on people's radar now.
You betcha, especially covering the price of inputs.
Oh, my. Yes. The good news is I look at 2023 new crop levels for December corn and November soybeans. They're not what they were a couple months ago, you know, back in mid-June, but they're still profitable, even when you think of the higher input costs. Not as wildly profitable as it was at one time, but still profitable.
Hey, thank you much.
Hey, thank you.
That's Ed Ussett. He's with University of Minnesota Extension, serves as an agricultural economist there. You've, of course, been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.